sat down and composed a document. Just before he died, Tim Noonan told me he had been shot by Max Thaler. Detective Bob McSwain heard him tell me. I gave Detective McSwain $200 and a diamond ring worth $1,000 to keep quiet and make it look like suicide. With this document in my pocket, I went downstairs, had another breakfast that was mostly coffee, and went up to the city hospital. Visiting hours were in the afternoon, but by flourishing my Continental Detective Agency credentials and giving everybody to understand that an hour's delay might cause thousands of deaths, or words to that effect, I got to see Myrtle Jennison. She was in a ward on the third floor, alone. The other four beds were empty. She could have been a girl of 25 or a woman of 55. Her face was a bloated, spotty mask. Lifeless yellow hair and two stringy braids lay on the pillow beside her. I waited until the nurse who had brought me up left. Then I held my document out to the invalid and said, "Will you sign this, please, Miss Jennison?" She looked at me with ugly eyes that were shaded into no particular dark color by the pads of flesh around them, then at the document, and finally brought a shapeless fat hand from under the covers to take it. She pretended it took her nearly 5 minutes to read the 42 words I had written. She let the document fall down on the covers and asked, "Where'd you get that?" Her voice was tinny, irritable. "Dinah Brand sent me to you," she asked eagerly.
"Has she broken off with Max?"
"Not that I know of," I lied. "I imagine she just wants to have this on hand in case it should come in handy."
"And get her full throat slit. Give me a pencil."
I gave her my fountain pen and held my notebook under the document to stiffen it while she scribbled her signature at the bottom, and to have it in my hands as soon as she had finished. While I fanned the paper dry, she said,
"If that's what she wants, it's all right with me. What do I care what anybody does now? I'm done. Hell with them all."
She sniggered and suddenly threw the bedclothes down to her knees, showing me a horrible swollen body in a coarse white nightgown.
"How do you like me? See, I'm done."
I pulled the covers up over her again and said, "Thanks for this, Miss Jennison."
"That's all right. It's nothing to me anymore. Only..."
Her puffy chin quivered.
"It's hell to die ugly as this."
Chapter 12. A New Deal. I went out to hunt for McSwain. Neither city directory nor telephone book told me anything. I did the pool rooms, cigar stores, speakeasies, looking around first, then asking cautious questions. That got me nothing. I walked the streets, looking for bowed legs. That got me nothing. I decided to go back to my hotel, grab a nap, and resume the hunting at night. In a far corner of the lobby, a man stopped hiding behind a newspaper and came out to meet me. He had bowed legs, a hog jaw, and was McSwain. I nodded carelessly at him and walked on toward the elevators. He followed me, mumbling, "Hey, you got a minute?" "Yeah, just about." I stopped, pretending indifference.
"Let's get out of sight," he said nervously.
I took him up to my room. He straddled a chair and put a match in his mouth. I sat on the side of the bed and waited for him to say something. He chewed his match a while and began,
"I'm gonna come clean with you, brother. I'm..."
"You mean you're going to tell me you knew me when you braced me yesterday?" I asked. "And you're going to tell me Bush hadn't told you to bet on him? And you didn't until afterwards? And you knew about his record because you used to be a bull? And you thought if you could get me to put it to him, you could clean up a little dough playing on him?"
"I'll be damned if I was going to come through with that much," he said. "But since it's been said, I'll put a yes to it."
"Did you clean up?"
"I win myself 600 iron men."
He pushed his hat back and scratched his forehead with the chewed end of his match.
and then I lose myself that and my own 200, and some in a crap game. What do you think of that? I pick up 600 berries like shooting fish and have to bum 4 bits for breakfast.
I said it was a tough break, but that was the kind of a world we lived in. He said,
uh-huh.
Put the match back in his mouth, ground it some more, and added,
that's why I thought I'd come to see you. I used to be in the racket myself, and...
What did Noonan put the skids under you for?
Skids? What skids? I quit. I come into a piece of change when the wife got killed in an automobile accident. Insurance, and I quit.
I heard he kicked you out the time his brother shot himself.
Well, you heard wrong. It was just after that. But you can ask him if I didn't quit.
It's not that much to me. Go on telling me why you came to see me.
I'm busted, flat. I know you're a continental op, and I got a pretty good hunch what you're up to here. I'm close to a lot that's going on both sides of things in this burg. There's things I could do for you, being an ex-dick, knowing the ropes both ways.
You want a stool pigeon for me? He looked me straight in the eye and said evenly,
there's no sense in a man picking out the worst name he can find for everything.
I'll give you something to do, McSwain. I took out Myrtle Jennison's document and passed it to him. Tell me about that. He read it through carefully, his lips framing the words, the match wavering up and down in his mouth. He got up, put the paper on the bed beside me, and scowled down at it.
There's something I'll have to find out about first, he said very solemnly. I'll be back in a little while and give you the whole story.
I laughed and told him, don't be silly. You know I'm not going to let you walk out on me.
I don't know that.
He shook his head, still solemn.
Neither do you. All you know is whether you're gonna try to stop me.
The answer's yeah, I said, while I considered that he was fairly hard and strong, 6 or 7 years younger than I, and 20 or 30 pounds lighter. He stood at the foot of the bed and looked at me with solemn eyes. I sat on the side of the bed and looked at him with whatever kind of eyes I had at the time. We did this for nearly 3 minutes. I used part of the time measuring the distance between us, figuring out how, by throwing my body back on the bed and turning on my hip, I could get my heels in his face if he jumped me. He was too close for me to pull the gun. I had just finished this mental map-making when he spoke.
That lousy ring wasn't worth no grand. I did swell to get 2 centuries for it.
He shook his head again and said,
first, I want to know what you're meaning to do about it.
Cop whisper.
I don't mean that. I mean with me.
You'll have to go over to the hall with me.
I won't.
Why not? You're only a witness.
I'm only a witness that Noonan can hang a bribe-taking or an accomplice after the act rap on, or both. And he'd be tickled simple to have the chance.
This jaw-wagging didn't seem to be leading anywhere. I said, that's too bad, but you're going to see him.
Try and take me.
I sat up straighter and slid my right hand back to my hip. He grabbed for me. I threw my body back on the bed, did the hip swing, swung my feet at him. It was a good trick, only it didn't work. In his hurry to get at me, he bumped the bed aside just enough to spill me off on the floor. I landed all sprawled out on my back. I kept dragging at my gun while I tried to roll under the bed. Missing me, his lunge carried him over the low footboard, over the side of the bed. He came down beside me, on the back of his neck, his body somersaulting over. I put the muzzle of my gun in his left eye and said, you're making a fine pair of clowns of us. Be still while I get up, or I'll make an opening in your head for brains to leak in. I got up, found and pocketed my document, and let him get up. Knock the dents out of your hat and put your necktie in front so you won't disgrace me going through the streets, I ordered after I had run a hand over his clothes and found nothing that felt like a weapon. You can suit yourself about remembering that this gat is going to be in my overcoat pocket with a hand on it. He straightened his hat and tie and said,
hey, listen, I'm in this, I guess, and cutting up won't get me nothing. Suppose I be good. Could you forget about the tussle? See, maybe it'd be smoother for me if they thought I'd come along without being dragged. Okay. Thanks, brother.
Noonan was out eating. We had to wait half an hour in his outer office. When he came in, he greeted me with the usual, "How are you?" "That certainly is fine," and the rest of it. He didn't say anything to McSwain, simply eyed him sourly. We went into the chief's private office. He pulled a chair over to his desk for me and then sat in his own, ignoring the ex-dick. I gave Noonan the sick girl's document. He gave it one glance, bounced out of his chair, and smashed a fist the size of a cantaloupe into McSwain's face. The punch carried McSwain across the room until a wall stopped him. The wall creaked under the strain, and a framed photograph of Noonan and other city dignitaries welcoming somebody in spats dropped down to the floor with the hit man. The fat chief waddled over, picked up the picture, and beat it to splinters on McSwain's head and shoulders. Noonan came back to his desk, puffing, smiling, saying cheerfully to me, "That fella's a rat if there ever was one." McSwain sat up and looked around, bleeding from nose, mouth, and head. Noonan roared at him, "Come here, you!" McSwain said, "Yes, chief," scrambled up and ran over to the desk. Noonan said, "Come through or I'll kill you." McSwain said, "Yes, chief." It was like she said, only that rock wasn't worth no grand. But she give me it and the 200 to keep my mouth shut, because I got there just when she asks him who did it, Tim, and he says, "Max." He says it kind of loud and sharp, like he wanted to get it out before he died, because he died right then, almost before he'd got it out. That's the way it was, chief, but the rock wasn't worth no... "Damn the rock," Noonan barked, "and stop bleeding on my rug." McSwain hunted in his pocket for a dirty handkerchief, mopped his nose and mouth with it, and jabbered on. "That's the way it was, chief. Everything else was like I said at the time, only I didn't say anything about hearing him say Max done it. I know I hadn't ought to..." "Shut up," Noonan said, and pressed one of the buttons on his desk. A uniformed copper came in. The chief jerked a thumb at McSwain and said, "Take this baby down cellar and let the wrecking crew work on him before you lock him up." McSwain started a desperate plea. "Ah, chief!" But the copper took him away before he could get any farther. Noonan stuck a cigar at me, tapped the document with another, and asked, "Where's this broad?" "In the city hospital, dying. You'll have the cuter get a stiff out of her? That one's not so good legally. I framed it for effect. Another thing, I hear that Peak Murray and Whisper aren't playmates anymore. Wasn't Murray one of his alibis?" The chief said, "He was," picked up one of his phones and said, "McGraw," and then, "Get hold of Peak Murray and ask him to drop in. And have Tony Agosti picked up for that knife throwing." He put the phone down, stood up, made a lot of cigar smoke, and said through it, "I haven't been always on the up and up with you." I thought that was putting it mildly, but I didn't say anything while he went on. "You know your way around. You know what these jobs are. There's this one and that one that's got to be listened to. Just because a man's chief of police doesn't mean he's chief. Maybe you're a lot of trouble to somebody that can be a lot of trouble to me. Don't make any difference if I think you're a right guy. I gotta play with them that play with me. See what I mean?" I wagged my head to show I did. "That's the way it was," he said. "But no more. This is something else, a new deal. When the old woman kicked off, Tim was just a lad. She said to me, 'Take care of him, John.' And I promised I would. And then Whisper murders him on account of that tramp." He reached down and took my hand. "See what I'm getting at? That's a year and a half ago. And you give me my first chance to hang it on him. I'm telling you, there's no man in Personville that's got a voice big enough to talk you down. Not after today." That pleased me, and I said so. We purred at each other until a lanky man with an extremely upturned nose in the middle of a round and freckled face was ushered in. It was Peak Murray. "We were just wondering about the time when Tim died," the chief said when Murray had been given a chair and a cigar. "Where Whisper was?"
You were out on the lake that night, weren't you?
Yep, Murray said, and the end of his nose got sharper.
With Whisper?
I wasn't with him all the time.
Were you with him at the time of the shooting?
Nope. The chief's greenish eyes got smaller and brighter. He asked softly,
You know where he was?
Nope. The chief sighed in a thoroughly satisfied way and leaned back in his chair.
Damn it, Peek, he said. You told us before that you were with him at the bar.
Yep, I did, the lanky man admitted.
But that don't mean nothing except that he asked me to and I didn't mind helping out a friend. Meaning you don't mind standing a perjury rap?
Don't kid me, Murray spit vigorously at the cuspidor. I didn't say nothing in no courtrooms.
How about Jerry and George Kelly and O'Brien? The chief asked. Did they say they were with him just because he asked them to?
O'Brien did. I don't know nothing about the others. I was going out of the bar when I run into Whisper, Jerry, and Kelly and went back to have a shot with them. Kelly told me Tim had been knocked off. Then Whisper says, It never hurts anybody to have an alibi.
We were here all the time, weren't we?
Andy looks at O'Brien, who's behind the bar. O'Brien says, Sure you was. And when Whisper looks at me, I say the same thing, but I don't know no reasons why I've got to cover him up nowadays.
And Kelly said Tim had been knocked off. Didn't say he'd been found dead.
Knocked off was the words he used,
the chief said. Thanks, Peek. You oughtn't to have done like you did, but what's done is done. How are the kids?
Murray said they were doing fine, only the baby wasn't as fat as he'd like to have him.
Noonan phoned the prosecuting attorney's office and had Dart and a stenographer take Peek's story before he left.
Noonan, Dart, and the stenographer set out for the city hospital to get a complete statement from Myrtle Jennison. I didn't go along. I decided I needed sleep, told the chief I would see him later, and returned to the hotel.
Chapter 13 $200.10 I had my vest unbuttoned when the telephone rang. It was Dinah Brand, complaining that she had been trying to get me since 10 o'clock.
Have you done anything on what I told you? She asked.
I've been looking it over. It seems pretty good. I think maybe I'll crack it this afternoon.
Don't. Hold it till I see you. Can you come up now?
I looked at the vacant white bed and said, Yes, without much enthusiasm. Another tub of cold water did me so little good that I almost fell asleep in it. Dan Rolfe let me in when I rang the girl's bell. He looked and acted as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened the night before. Dinah Brand came into the hall to help me off with my overcoat. She had on a tan woolen dress with a 2-inch rip in one shoulder seam. She took me into the living room. She sat on the Chesterfield beside me and said,
I'm going to ask you to do something for me. You like me enough, don't you?
I admitted that. She counted the knuckles of my left hand with a warm forefinger and explained,
I want you to not do anything more about what I told you last night. Now wait a minute. Wait till I get through. Dan was right. I oughtn't to sell Max out like that. It would be utterly filthy. Besides, it's Noonan you chiefly want, isn't it? Well, if you'll be a nice darling and lay off Max this time, I'll give you enough on Noonan to nail him forever. You'd like that better, wouldn't you? And you like me too much to want to take advantage of me by using information I gave you when I was mad at what Max had said, don't you?
What is the dirt on Noonan? I asked. She kneaded my biceps and murmured,
You promise?
Not yet. She pouted at me and said,
I'm off Max for life, on the level. You've got no right to make me turn rat.
What about Noonan?
Promise me first.
No. She dug fingers into my arm and asked sharply,
You've already gone to Noonan?
Yeah. She let go my arm, frowned, shrugged, and said gloomily,
Well, how can I help it?
I stood up and a voice said, Sit down.
It was a hoarse, whispering voice, Thaler's. I turned to see him standing in the dining room doorway, a big gun in one of his little hands. A red-faced man with a scarred cheek stood behind him. The other doorway, opening to the hall, filled as I sat down. The loose-mouthed, chinless man I had heard whisper called Jerry came a step through it. He had a couple of guns. The more angular one of the blonde kids who had been in the King Street joint looked over his shoulder. Dinah Brand got up from the Chesterfield, put her back to Thaler, and addressed me. Her voice was husky with rage.
"This is none of my doing. He came here by himself, said he was sorry for what he had said, and showed me how we could make a lot of coin by turning Noonan up for you. The whole thing was a plant, but I fell for it, honest to Christ. He was to wait upstairs while I put it to you. I didn't know anything about the others. I didn't..."
Jerry's casual voice drawled.
"If I shoot a pin from under her, she'll sure sit down, and maybe shut up, okay?"
I couldn't see, whisper. The girl was between us. He said, "Not now. Where's Dan?" The angular blonde youngster said,
"Up on the bathroom floor. I had to sap him."
Dinah Brand turned around to face Thaler. Stocking seams made S's up the ample backs of her legs. She said,
"Max Thaler, you're a lousy little..."
He whispered, very deliberately,
"Shut up and get out of the way."
She surprised me by doing both, and she kept quiet while he spoke to me.
"So you and Noonan are trying to paste his brother's death on me?"
"It doesn't need pasting. It's a natural." He curved his thin lips at me and said,
"You're as crooked as he is."
I said, "You know better. I played your side when he tried to frame you. This time he's got you copped to rights." Dinah Brand flared up again, waving her arms in the center of the room, storming,
"Get out of here, the whole lot of you! Why should I give a goddamn about your troubles? Get out!"
The blonde kid who had sapped Rolf squeezed past Jerry and came grinning into the room. He caught one of the girl's flourished arms and bent it behind her. She twisted toward him, socked him in the belly with her other fist. It was a very respectable wallop, man-size. It broke his grip on her arm, sent him back a couple of steps. The kid gulped a wide mouthful of air, whisked the blackjack from his hip, and stepped in again. His grin was gone. Jerry laughed what little chin he had out of sight. Thaler whispered harshly,
"Lay off!"
The kid didn't hear him. He was snarling at the girl. She watched him with a face hard as a silver dollar. She was standing with most of her weight on her left foot. I guessed Blondie was going to stop a kick when he closed in. The kid feinted a grab with his empty left hand, started the blackjack at her face. Thaler whispered,
"Lay off!"
again, and fired. The bullet smacked Blondie under the right eye, spun him around, and dropped him backwards into Dinah Brand's arms. This looked like the time, if there was to be any. In the excitement, I had got my hand to my hip. Now I yanked the gun out and snapped a cap at Thaler, trying for his shoulder. That was wrong. If I had tried for a bullseye, I would have winged him. Chinless Jerry hadn't left himself blind. He beat me to the shot. His shot burnt my wrist, throwing me off the target. But, missing Thaler, my slug crumpled the red-faced man behind him. Not knowing how badly my wrist was nicked, I switched the gun to my left hand. Jerry had another try at me. The girl spoiled it by heaving the corpse at him. The dead yellow head banged into his knees. I jumped for him while he was off balance. The jump took me out of the path of Thaler's bullet. It also tumbled me and Jerry out into the hall, all tangled up together. Jerry wasn't tough to handle, but I had to work quick. There was Thaler behind me. I socked Jerry twice, kicked him, butted him at least once, and was hunting for a place to bite when he went limp under me. I poked him again where his chin should have been, just to make sure he wasn't faking, and went away on hands and knees, down the hall a bit, out of line with the door. I sat on my heels against the wall, held my gun level at Thaler's part of the premises, and waited. I couldn't hear anything for the moment except blood singing in my head. Dinah Brand stepped out of the door I had tumbled through, looked at Jerry, then at me. She smiled with her tongue between her teeth,
beckoned with a jerk of her head and returned to the living room. I followed her cautiously. Whisper stood in the center of the floor. His hands were empty, and so was his face. Except for his vicious little mouth, he looked like something displaying suits in a clothing store window. Dan Rolfe stood behind him, with a gun muzzle tilted to the little gambler's left kidney. Rolfe's face was mostly blood. The blonde kid, now dead on the floor between Rolfe and me, had sapped him plenty. I grinned at Thaler and said, "Well, this is nice," before I saw that Rolfe had another gun, centered on my chubby middle. That wasn't so nice, but my gun was reasonably level in my hand. I didn't have much worse than an even break. Rolfe said, "Put down your pistol." I looked at Dinah, looked puzzled, I suppose. She shrugged and told me, "It seems to be Dan's party." "Yeah? Somebody ought to tell him I don't like to play this way." Rolfe repeated, "Put down your pistol." I said disagreeably, "I'm damned if I will. I've shed 20 pounds trying to nab this bird, and I can spare 20 more for the same purpose," Rolfe said. "I'm not interested in what is between you two, and I have no intention of giving either of you." Dinah Brand had wandered across the room. When she was behind Rolfe, I interrupted his speech by telling her, "If you upset him now, you're sure of making two friends, Noonan and me. You can't trust Thaler anymore, so there's no use helping him." She laughed and said, "Talk money, darling." "Dinah," Rolfe protested. He was caught. She was behind him, and she was strong enough to handle him. It wasn't likely that he would shoot her, and it wasn't likely that anything else would keep her from doing whatever she decided to do. $100, I bid.
"My God," she exclaimed. "I've actually got a cash offer out of you. But not enough."
$200.
"You're getting reckless, but I still can't hear you."
"Try," I said. It's worth that to me not to have to shoot Rolfe's gun out of his hand, but no more than that.
"You got a good start. Don't weaken. One more bid anyway."
$200.10, and that's all.
"You big bum," she said. "I won't do it."
"Suit yourself." I made a face at Thaler and cautioned him. "When what happens happens, be damned sure you keep still," Dinah cried.
"Wait! Are you really going to start something?"
"I'm going to take Thaler out with me, regardless."
$200 and a dime?
"Yeah."
"Dinah,"
Rolfe called without turning his face from me. "You won't..." But she laughed, came close to his back, and wound her strong arms around him, pulling his arms down, pinning them to his sides. I shoved Thaler out of the way with my right arm and kept my gun on him while I yanked Rolfe's weapons out of his hands. Dinah turned the lunger loose. He took 2 steps toward the dining room door, said wearily,
"There is no,"
and collapsed on the floor. Dinah ran to him. I pushed Thaler through the hall door, past the still-sleeping Jerry, and to the alcove beneath the front stairs, where I had seen a phone. I called Noonan, told him I had Thaler and where.
"Mother of God," he said. "Don't kill him till I get there."
Chapter 14. Max. The news of Whisper's capture spread quickly. When Noonan, the coppers he had brought along, and I took the gambler and the now-conscious Jerry into the city hall, there were at least 100 people standing around watching us. All of them didn't look pleased. Noonan's coppers, a shabby lot at best, moved around with whitish, strained faces. But Noonan was the most triumphant guy west of the Mississippi. Even the bad luck he had trying to third-degree Whisper couldn't spoil his happiness. Whisper stood up under all they could give him. He would talk to his lawyer, he said, and to nobody else, and he stuck to it. And, as much as Noonan hated the gambler, here was a prisoner he didn't give the works, didn't turn over to the wrecking crew. Whisper had killed the chief's brother, and the chief hated his guts, but Whisper was still too much somebody in Poisonville to be roughed around. Noonan finally got tired of playing with his prisoner and sent him up, the prison was on the city hall's top floor, to be stowed away. I lit another of the chief's cigars and read the detailed statement he had got from the woman in the hospital. There was nothing in it that I hadn't learned from Dinah and McSwain. The chief wanted me to come out to his house for dinner, but I lied out of it, pretending that my wrist, now in a bandage, was bothering me. It was really little more than a burn. While we were talking about it, a pair of plainclothesmen brought in the red-faced bird who had stopped the slug I had missed Whisper with. It had broken a rib for him, and he had taken a backdoor sneak while the rest of us were busy. Noonan's men had picked him up in a doctor's office. The chief failed to get any information out of him and sent him off to the hospital. I got up and prepared to leave, saying, "The Brand girl gave me the tip-off on this. That's why I asked you to keep her and Rolf out of it." The chief took hold of my left hand for the fifth or sixth time in the past couple of hours. "If you want her taken care of, that's enough for me," he assured me. "But if she had a hand in turning that bastard up, you can tell her from me that any time she wants anything, all she's got to do is name it." I said I'd tell her that and went over to my hotel, thinking about that neat white bed. But it was nearly 8 o'clock, and my stomach needed attention. I went into the hotel dining room and had that fixed up. Then a leather chair tempted me into stopping in the lobby while I burnt a cigar. That led to conversations with a traveling railroad auditor from Denver who knew a man I knew in St. Louis. Then there was a lot of shooting in the street. We went to the door and decided that the shooting was in the vicinity of the city hall. I shook the auditor and moved up that way. I had done 2/3 of the distance when an automobile came down the street toward me, moving fast, leaking gunfire from the rear. I backed into an alley entrance and slid my gun loose. The car came abreast. An arc light brightened 2 faces in the front of the car. The driver's meant nothing to me. The upper part of the others was hidden by a pulled-down hat. The lower part was Whisper's. Across the street was the entrance to another block of my alley, lighted at the far end. Between the light and me, somebody moved just as Whisper's car roared past. The somebody had dodged from behind one shadow that might have been an ash can to another. What made me forget Whisper was that the somebody's legs had a bowed look. A load of coppers buzzed past, throwing lead at the first car. I skipped across the street, into the section of alley that held a man who might have bowed legs. If he was my man, it was a fair bet he wasn't armed. I played it that way, moving straight up the slimy middle of the alley, looking into shadows with eyes, ears, and nose. 3/4 of a block of this, and a shadow broke away from another shadow, a man going pell-mell away from me. "Stop!" I bawled, pounding my feet after him. "Stop, or I'll plug you, McSwain!" He ran 6 strides farther and stopped, turning. "Oh, it's you," he said, as if it made any difference who took him back to the Hooskow. "Yeah," I confessed. "What are all you people doing wandering around loose? I don't know nothing about it. Somebody dynamited the floor out of the can. I dropped through the hole with the rest of them. There was some mugs standing off the bulls. I made the backtrotters with one bunch. Then we split, and I was figuring on cutting over and making the hills. I didn't have nothing to do with it. I just went along when she blew open." "Whisper was pinched this evening," I told him. "Hell, then that's it. Noonan had ought to know he'd never keep that guy screwed up. Not in this burg." We were standing still in the alley where McSwain had stopped running. "You know what he was pinched for?" I asked. "Uh-huh, for killing Tim." "You know who killed Tim?" "Huh? Sure, he did." "You did." "Huh? What's the matter? You simple?" "There's a gun in my left hand," I warned him. "But look here, didn't he tell the broad that Whisper done it? What's the matter with you?" "He didn't say Whisper." I've heard women call Thaler Max, but I've never heard a man here call him anything but Whisper. Tim didn't say Max. He said Mix, the first part of McSwain, and died before he could finish it. Don't forget about the gun.
What would I have killed him for? He was after Whispers.
I haven't got around to that yet, I admitted, but let's see. You and your wife had busted up. Tim was a ladies' man, wasn't he? Maybe there's something there. I'll have to look it up. What started me thinking about you was that you never tried to get any more money out of the girl.
Cut it out, he begged. You know there ain't any sense to it. What would I have hung around afterwards for? I'd have been out getting an alibi, like Whisper.
Why? You were a dick then. Close by was the spot for you. To see that everything went right, handle it yourself.
You know damned well it don't hang together. Don't make sense. Cut it out, for God's sake.
I don't mind how goofy it is, I said. It's something to put to Noonan when we get back. He's likely all broken up over Whisper's crush-out. This will take his mind off it. McSwain got down on his knees in the muddy alley and cried,
Oh, Christ, no! He'd croak me with his hands!
Get up and stop yelling, I growled. Now will you give it to me straight? He whined.
He'd croak me with his hands!
Suit yourself. If you won't talk, I will, to Noonan. If you'll come through to me, I'll do what I can for you.
What can you do?
He asked hopelessly and started sniveling again.
How do I know you'll try to do anything?
I risked a little truth on him. You said you had a hunch what I'm up to here in Poisonville. Then you ought to know that it's my play to keep Noonan and Whisper split. Letting Noonan think Whisper killed Tim will keep them split. But if you don't want to play with me, come on, we'll play with Noonan.
You mean you won't tell him? He asked eagerly. You promise?
I promise you nothing, I said. Why should I? I've got you with your pants down. Talk to me or Noonan, and make up your mind quick. I'm not going to stand here all night. He made up his mind to talk to me.
I don't know how much you know, but it was like you said, my wife fell for Tim. That's what put me on the tramp. You can ask anybody if I wasn't a good guy before that. I was this way. What she wanted, I wanted her to have. Mostly what she wanted was tough on me, but I couldn't be any other way. We'd have been a damn sight better off if I could. So I let her move out and put in divorce papers so she could marry him, thinking he meant to. Pretty soon I begin to hear he's chasing this Myrtle Jennison. I couldn't go that. I'd given him his chance with Helen, fair and square. Now he was giving her the air for this Myrtle. I wasn't going to stand for that. Helen was no hanky-panky. It was accidental, though. Running into him at the lake that night. When I saw him go down to them summer houses, I went after him. That looked like a good quiet place to have it out. I guess we'd both had a little something to drink. Anyway, we had it hot and heavy. When it got too hot for him, he pulled the gun. He was yellow. I grabbed it, and in the tussle it went off. I swear to God I didn't shoot him except like that. It went off while the both of us had our hands on it. I beat it back in some bushes. But when I got in the bushes, I could hear him moaning and talking. There was people coming. A girl running down from the hotel, that Myrtle Jennison. I wanted to go back and hear what Tim was saying so I'd know where I stood, but I was leery of being the first one there. So I had to wait till the girl got to him, listening all the time to his squawking, but too far away to make it out. When she got to him, I ran over and got there just as he died trying to say my name. I didn't think about that being Whisper's name till she propositioned me with the suicide letter, the 200, and the rock. I'd just been stalling around, pretending to get the job lined up, being on the force then, and trying to find out where I stood. Then she makes the play, and I know I'm sitting pretty. And that's the way it went till you started digging it up again.
He slopped his feet up and down in the mud and added,
Next week, my wife got killed. An accident. Uh-huh. An accident. She drove the Ford square in front of number 6 where it comes down the long grade from Tanner and stopped it there.
Is Mock Lake in this county? I asked.
No, Boulder County.
That's out of Noonan's territory. Suppose I take you over there and hand you to the sheriff.
No, he's Senator Kiefer's son-in-law, Tom Cook. I might as well be here. Noonan could get to me through Kiefer.
If it happened the way you say, you've got at least an even chance of beating the rap in court.
They won't give me a chance. I'd have stood it if there'd been a chance in the world of getting an even break, but not with them.
We're going back to the hall, I said. Keep your mouth shut. Noonan was waddling up and down the floor, cursing the half a dozen bulls who stood around wishing they were somewhere else. Here's something I found roaming around, I said, pushing McSwain forward. Noonan knocked the ex-detective down, kicked him, and told one of the coppers to take him away. Somebody called Noonan on the phone. I slipped out without saying goodnight and walked back to the hotel. Off to the north, some guns popped. A group of three men passed me, shifty-eyed, walking pigeon-toed. A little farther along, another man moved all the way over to the curb to give me plenty of room to pass. I didn't know him and didn't suppose he knew me. A lone shot sounded not far away. As I reached the hotel, a battered black touring car went down the street, hitting 50 at least, crammed to the curtains with men. I grinned after it. Poisonville was beginning to boil out under the lid, and I felt so much like a native that even the memory of my very unnice part in the boiling didn't keep me from getting 12 solid end-to-end hours of sleep. Chapter 15. Cedar Hill Inn. Mickey Linehan used the telephone to wake me a little after noon.
We're here, he told me. Where's the reception committee?
Probably stopped to get a rope. Check your bags and come up to the hotel, room 537. Don't advertise your visit. I was dressed when they arrived. Mickey Linehan was a big slob with sagging shoulders and a shapeless body that seemed to be coming apart at all its joints. His ears stood out like red wings, and his round red face usually wore the meaningless smirk of a halfwit. He looked like a comedian, and was. Dick Foley was a boy-sized Canadian with a sharp, irritable face. He wore high heels to increase his height, perfumed his handkerchiefs, and saved all the words he could. They were both good operatives. What did the old man tell you about the job? I asked when we had settled into seats. The old man was the manager of the Continental San Francisco branch. He was also known as Pontius Pilate because he smiled pleasantly when he sent us out to be crucified on suicidal jobs. He was a gentle, polite, elderly person with no more warmth in him than a hangman's rope. The agency wit said he could spit icicles in July.
He didn't seem to know much what it was all about, Mickey said, except that you had wired for help. He said he hadn't got any reports from you for a couple of days.
The chances are he'll wait a couple more. Know anything about this Personville? Dick shook his head. Mickey said,
only that I've heard parties call it Poisonville like they meant it.
I told them what I knew and what I had done. The telephone bell interrupted my tale in the last quarter. Dinah Brand's lazy voice.
Hello. How's the wrist?
Only a burn. What do you think of the crush out?
It's not my fault, she said. I did my part. If Noonan couldn't hold him, that's just too bad. I'm coming downtown to buy a hat this afternoon. I thought I'd drop in and see you for a couple of minutes if you're gonna be there.
What time?
Oh, around 3.
Right, I'll expect you, and I'll have that 200 and a dime I owe you.
Do, she said. That's what I'm coming in for. Ta-ta.
I went back to my seat and my story. When I had finished, Mickey Linehan whistled and said,
No wonder you're scared to send in any reports.
The old man wouldn't do much if he knew what you've been up to, would he? If it works out the way I want it to, I won't have to report all the distressing details, I said.
It's right enough for the agency to have rules and regulations. But when you're out on a job, you've got to do it the best way you can. And anybody that brings any ethics to Poisonville is going to get them all rusty. A report is no place for the dirty details anyway, and I don't want you birds to send any writing back to San Francisco without letting me see it first. What kind of crimes have you got for us to pull? Mickey asked. I want you to take Pete the Finn. Dick will take Lou Yard. You'll have to play it the way I've been playing. Do what you can when you can. I've an idea that the pair of them will try to make Noonan let Whisper alone. I don't know what he'll do. He's shifty as hell, and he does want to even up his brother's killing. After I take this finished gent, Mickey said, what do I do with him? I don't want to brag about how dumb I am, but this job is plain as astronomy to me. I understand everything about it except what you have done and why and what you're trying to do and how. You can start off by shadowing him. I've got to have a wedge that can be put between Pete and Yard, Yard and Noonan, Pete and Noonan, Pete and Thaler, or Yard and Thaler. If we can smash things up enough, break the combination, they'll have their knives in each other's backs, doing our work for us. The break between Thaler and Noonan is a starter, but it'll sag on us if we don't help it along. I could buy more dope on the whole lot from Dinah Brand, but there's no use taking anybody into court, no matter what you've got on them. They own the courts, and besides, the courts are too slow for us now. I've got myself tangled up in something, and as soon as the old man smells it, and San Francisco isn't far enough away to fool his nose, he's going to be sitting on the wire asking for explanations. I've got to have results to hide the details under, so evidence won't do. What we've got to have is dynamite. What about our respected client, Mr. Elihu Wilson? Mickey asked. What are you planning to do with or to him? Maybe ruin him, maybe club him into backing us up. I don't care which. You'd better stay at the hotel person, Mickey, and Dick can go to the National. Keep apart, and if you want to keep me from being fired, burn the job up before the old man tumbles. Better write these down. I gave them names, descriptions, and addresses when I had them of Elihu Wilson, Stanley Lewis, his secretary, Dinah Brand, Dan Rolfe, Noonan, Max Thaler, alias Whisper, his right-hand man, the chinless Jerry, Mrs. Donald Wilson, Lewis's daughter, who had been Donald Wilson's secretary, and Bill Quint, Dinah's radical ex-boyfriend. Now hop to it, I said. And don't kid yourselves that there's any law in Poisonville except what you make for yourself. Mickey said I'd be surprised how many laws he could get along without. Dick said, so long, and they departed. After breakfast, I went over to the city hall. Noonan's greenish eyes were bleary as if they hadn't been sleeping, and his face had lost some of its color. He pumped my hand up and down as enthusiastically as ever, and the customary amount of cordiality was in his voice and manner. Any line on Whisper? I asked when we had finished the glad handing. I think I've got something. He looked at the clock on the wall and then at his phone. I'm expecting a word any minute. Sit down. Who else got away? Jerry Hooper and Tony Agosti are the only other ones still out. We picked up the rest. Jerry is Whisper's man Friday, and the Wop's one of his mob. He's the bozo that put the knife in Ike Bush the night of the fight. Any more of Whisper's mob in? No. We just had the three of them except Buck Wallace, the fella you potted. He's in the hospital. The chief looked at the wall clock again and at his watch. It was exactly 2 o'clock. He turned to the phone. It rang. He grabbed it and said, Noonan talking. Yes. 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 Right. He pushed the phone aside and played a tune on the row of pearl buttons on his desk. The office filled up with coppers. Cedar Hill Inn, he said. You follow me out with your detail, Bates. Terry, shoot out Broadway and hit the dump from behind. Pick up the boys on traffic duty as you go along. It's likely we'll need everybody we can get.
Duffy, take yours out Union Street and around by the old mine road. McGraw will hold headquarters down. Get hold of everybody you can and send them after us. Jump!
He grabbed his hat and went out after them, calling over his thick shoulder to me.
Come on, man, this is the kill!
I followed him down to the department garage, where the engines of half a dozen cars were roaring. The chief sat beside his driver. I sat in back with four detectives. Men scrambled into the other cars. Machine guns were unwrapped. Armloads of rifles and riot guns were distributed, and packages of ammunition. The chief's car got away first, off with a jump that hammered our teeth together. We missed the garage door by half an inch, chased a couple of pedestrians diagonally across the sidewalk, bounced off the curb into the roadway, missed a truck as narrowly as we had missed the door, and dashed out King Street with our siren wide open. Panicky automobiles darted right and left, regardless of traffic rules, to let us through. It was a lot of fun. I looked back, saw another police car following us, a third turning into Broadway. Noonan chewed a cold cigar and told the driver, "Give her a bit more, Pat." Pat twisted us around a frightened woman's coupe, put us through a slot between streetcar and laundry wagon, a narrow slot that we couldn't have slipped through if our car hadn't been so smoothly enameled, and said, "All right, but the brakes ain't no good." "That's nice," the gray-mustached sleuth on my left said. He didn't sound sincere. Out of the center of the city, there wasn't much traffic to bother us, but the paving was rougher. It was a nice half-hour's ride, with everybody getting a chance to sit in everybody else's lap. The last 10 minutes of it was over an uneven road that had hills enough to keep us from forgetting what Pat had said about the brakes. We wound up at a gate topped by a shabby electric sign that had said Cedar Hill Inn before it lost its globes. The roadhouse, 20 feet behind the gate, was a squat wooden building painted a moldy green and chiefly surrounded by rubbish. Front door and windows were closed, blank. We followed Noonan out of the car. The machine that had been trailing us came into sight around a bend in the road, slid to rest beside ours, and unloaded its cargo of men and weapons. Noonan ordered this and that. A trio of coppers went around each side of the building. Three others, including a machine gunner, remained by the gate. The rest of us walked through tin cans, bottles, and ancient newspaper to the front of the house. The gray-mustached detective who had sat beside me in the car carried a red axe. We stepped up on the porch. Noise and fire came out under a windowsill. The gray-mustached detective fell down, hiding the axe under his corpse. The rest of us ran away. I ran with Noonan. We hid in the ditch on the inside of the road. It was deep enough and banked high enough to let us stand almost erect without being targets. The chief was excited. "What luck," he said happily. "He's here, by God, he's here." "That shot came from under the sill," I said. "Not a bad trick." "We'll spoil it, though," he said cheerfully. "We'll sieve the dump. Duffy ought to be pulling up on the other road by now, and Terry Shane won't be many minutes behind him. Hey, Donner!" He called to a man who was peeping around a boulder. "Swing back and tell Duffy and Shane to start closing in as soon as they come. Letting fly with all they got. Where's Kimball?" The peeper jerked a thumb toward a tree beyond him. We could see only the upper part of it from our ditch. "Tell him to set up his mill and start grinding," Noonan ordered. "Low across the front ought to do it like cutting cheese." The peeper disappeared. Noonan went up and down the ditch, risking his noodle over the top now and then for a look around, once in a while calling or gesturing to his men. He came back, sat on his heels beside me, gave me a cigar, and lit one for himself. "It'll do," he said complacently. "Whisper won't have a chance. He's done." The machine gun by the tree fired, haltingly, experimentally, 8 or 10 shots. Noonan grinned and let a smoke ring float out of his mouth. The machine gun settled down to business, grinding out metal like the busy little death factory it was. Noonan blew another smoke ring and said, "That's exactly what'll do it." I agreed that it ought to. We leaned against the clay bank and smoked while, farther away, another machine gun got going, and then a third. Irregularly, rifles, pistols, shotguns joined in.
Noonan nodded approvingly and said, 5 minutes of that will let him know there's a hell.
When the 5 minutes were up, I suggested a look at the remains. I gave him a boost up the bank and scrambled up after him. The roadhouse was as bleak and empty-looking as before, but more battered. No shots came from it. Plenty were going into it.
What do you think? Noonan asked.
If there's a cellar, there might be a mouse alive in it.
Well, we could finish him afterwards.
He took a whistle out of his pocket and made a lot of noise. He waved his